Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, we've all heard a lot about Windows 8 by now, but how is it different from what we've been using before? How well will it work with a screen reader? Well, those are some of the questions that we'll try to answer in this show.
We'll talk with Jeremy Curry of GW Micro about Windows 8, and in particular using it with WindowEyes. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Jeremy Curry.
One of the things I think that would have been a lot better is if I had known earlier, I could have learned Braille. And no one ever knew that I was going to lose my sight, so I didn't know. And so I can type Braille very fast. It's very difficult for me to read it, but it's such a huge advantage in the work world. I mean, we see the stats that show that all the time, and that's something that I really wish I had been able to learn. And I think that's something that's so difficult for people to learn later in life, simply because our brains aren't a sponge like they used to be when we were 9 or 10 years old.
And there's a lot of talk these days about Braille literacy. It isn't generally taught to young folks these days, and as Jeremy points out, it's a lot harder to learn when you're older. Fortunately, there are other ways of accessing material electronically and through the nice readers that we have. But still, sometimes Braille is handy. Sometimes you need something quiet, and sometimes it's a good way to take notes and do other tasks.
And I think Jeremy's point is, as soon as you find out that you're going to be losing your vision to a point where you won't be able to use print, learn Braille as early as you can. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Jeremy Curry. Can you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Jeremy Curry. I'm the director of training for GW Micro. And for those of you who don't know, GW Micro makes a product called WindowEyes, a screen reader that produces both speech and Braille on Windows-based computers. And we've been doing that for about 22 years now. So I travel around teaching WindowEyes to students, to government agencies, educators, pretty much you name it. So I get to work with people like that. Then I get to work with the big corporations too, like Apple and Microsoft, and teach them about accessibility and how to make things accessible and more usable for people who are either blind or have a visual impairment.
And do you have a visual impairment yourself?
I do. I have some vision. Depending on the day, I might be low vision. I might be nearly total. It just kind of depends on how my eyes are that day. I use a black Labrador guide dog that I've had for the past 3 years. He's my first dog and just is absolutely amazing.
And what's the cause of your visual impairment?
I have something called cone dystrophy. I was diagnosed when I turned 18. I had lost about 60 acuity points over a period of about 6 months or so. And I actually tried to sign up for the Marine Corps. And that's how I found out I was losing my sight, because they wouldn't let me in because I couldn't see well enough. And I found out that I was losing my vision, and it's just decreased ever since then. I've become very light sensitive. For the people in the audience who have macular degeneration, it's kind of similar to that.
So I'm kind of curious. I've always thought it's more difficult for people to go blind later in life. Can you talk a little bit about the transition and what accommodations you had to make?
Yeah, it's extremely difficult. I would never say that's very easy. It's kind of interesting. I have lots of friends who have lost their sight later in life than I have at the same time, and people have been totally blind since birth. And it always amazes me that it appears that most of the people who lose their sight or have had no sight since they were either child or from birth are, you know, just very well adjusted. It's almost like they can see walking around, most of them. But in my case, I was just getting ready to enter college and had to basically revamp my entire life, because my goal was to be a Marine, and then that was taken away from me and had to adjust to that. And the rest of my life had to change too. I had to figure out where I was going with that. And so in my case, I was introduced for the first time to a product called Zoom Text in 1998, which I thought you had to have a massive screen to be able to make things big. I didn't know there were software magnifiers. I didn't know there were screen readers. So I was introduced to WindowEyes at that point. I had to learn how to scan books and listen to books on tape, and worked my way through college as I was losing sight. And it's been quite a transition, because I used to be able to drive. Then I drove with something called bioptics, which is where you're almost legally blind but can still drive. And then a couple years ago, I lost the ability to drive. I just couldn't see well enough to do it anymore and had to transition to a dog. And so I've kind of gone the full gamut over about 15 years. And I'm sure there's still more sight to lose, but there's a lot of adjustments to make, not only in the way that you have to live, but in the way that you have to deal with technology and the way you have to deal with people even. So it's a huge transition.
And Jeremy is obviously a great example of how people can make that transformation in the face of such an adversity. So congratulations to him. Now he has a rewarding career and is making some good contributions to the blindness community.
You are listening to Viewpoint.
Turning now to this week's focus item, we wanted to talk a little bit about Windows 8 so some of our listeners could get a feel for what was new in Windows 8, what they might expect if they're upgrading or moving to that system, and then also get an idea of how Window Eyes works with Windows 8.
We've been working on Windows 8 for quite a while. I gave my first public presentation on it at CSUN in February of 2012, the day after the public preview came out. It's a huge difference. It's a huge shift in what we've all been used to. And to give people kind of a very basic understanding or the basic premise of what Windows 8 is it's really Microsoft's first attempt to bring a touchscreen / mobile interface to a desktop platform. And anytime that you have a first attempt like this, there are always going to be challenges. There's going to be challenges in how the keyboard is used. There's going to be challenges in how the user interface is presented. There's challenges in regards to making things accessible, and not only accessible, but usable. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you have to look at Windows 8 as. Is it accessible and is it usable? Because just because something is accessible doesn't necessarily mean that it's usable. And I think you have to walk that fine line sometimes. The general premise, again, is to bring that mobile interface to a desktop platform. It's never been done before.
So we were actually out at Microsoft this summer and we got to meet with their accessibility people and saw a preview of Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me that some of the features make it maybe not only confusing for blind folks, but also for sighted folks. Can you sort of give an overview of the structure of how they put this together?
We always have to think in things in orientation of having a touch interface because that's the way mobile platforms have gone. So instead of having a start menu, when you very first boot up Windows, you have something called a start screen. And that start screen is made up of various tiles. Think of tiles like an icon, except that physically they're bigger. And not only are they bigger, but they can present other pieces of information to you. For example, if you have an app called Weather that presents itself as a tile, and that weather information may be inside of that tile. So when you're on top of it, Window Eyes would read you the weather, if you will, or a sighted person could actually see, you know, it's 73 degrees and sunny outside. Or if you had a news app or a money app, those would present themselves as tiles. And a sighted person can then take their finger on a touchscreen device and move across all of those tiles. And if they wanted to, they could actually just tap that particular tile and it would open up that app. Kind of similar to if you're used to the iOS devices, if you went to an app and you double tapped it using VoiceOver, then it would open up. And the same is true with Windows 8. And that's the fundamental change, meaning that's what's really going to be very evident to any user who starts Windows 8, whether you're blind or whether you're sighted.
Now, I also understand that in this start screen, there may be another tile that's labeled as the desktop.
Yes. So this is where it gets confusing because in Windows 8, you can have both apps and you can have programs. They're actually two different concepts. An app, you'll be able to tell if it's an app because it does not have a menu. For example, there's no file menu or view menu or edit menu. If it's in a program, it's going to have a menu. And there are other core differences, but to the end user, that's how it's going to look. And the desktop, which has always traditionally been a core part of Windows, is actually an app. I know that seems very strange, but desktop is actually an app. Now, when you're at the start screen, the nice thing about that is whether you know it's an app or not, you really don't have to know that. It's just some people like to know that. You can still go to the desktop either by finding the tile and pressing enter on it, or you can do your Windows key M or your Windows key D, just like you've done in the past. Those keystrokes still function. The main difference is once you go to the desktop, if you were to press your Windows key, instead of a start menu, the start screen is going to appear. But if you like the traditional icons that we've all come to know and love from Windows, you still have the ability to get to all that just like you always have in the past. And so while some people are very afraid of Windows 8, there are still lots of things that are familiar to us. And in general, Microsoft has done a really good job of making things accessible. That might be a little debatable as far as usability, but as far as accessibility, they've done a really good job and have worked very closely with us to do that. But there is some familiarity there, so I don't want to make people who are listening to this kind of freak out and say, I don't want to get Windows 8. It's still possible. You can use it. You can get to the desktop. You can navigate through icons. You can navigate through your taskbar. You can navigate through your system tray. You just have to know those standard Microsoft keystrokes that get you there, like we've all come to know and love over the years.
So it sounds like keeping this desktop tile was Microsoft's way of helping you bridge the gap between the legacy UI and this new tablet-based UI.
If I were to purely speculate, I would say yes, that's probably true, because otherwise most people would be lost, because you're used to seeing, as a sighted person, that entire desktop when you boot up Windows. You can't see any of that at all when you boot up Windows. You just see the start screen with tiles. And so I think you're absolutely on target that that's probably why that desktop tile is there. And you can change tiles and delete tiles so people can maneuver those around and get rid of the ones they want and add the ones they like once they get familiar with Windows 8.
And the other unique feature that we noticed in Windows 8 was the charms. Can you talk a little about that?
The charms bar is something that actually appears from the right-hand side of the menu. It allows you to get to certain things quickly. You can get to the start screen from there. You can get to settings from there, and you can do some other things. I believe that you can even add some specific app things there. I'm not certain on that because I haven't played with that portion of it too much, but I think that you can do that. And again, that's something that was a gesture-based to be able to pull something out of the side of the screen with a hand gesture. You can get to there, I believe it's Windows key C, if I remember correctly, to get to the charms bar. Sounds kind of funny as a name, but again, that's something that is accessible and it's actually usable too.
Back to the legacy capabilities. I know we've got Office 2010, but sometimes I can't find something that I used to know how to do. And I'll go back in and use the keystroke equivalents that were from two or three generations ago in Office.
Mm-hmm.
Did they still retain the ability to use the old familiar keystroke equivalents?
In Office 2010, that hasn't changed. And most of the time inside of Windows, that's true. There are some instances where that's not the case. Here's a good example, and this I think is what scares blind users the most when I talk about this. If you're on the start screen, for example, like I've got Window Eyes here in front of me.
Space. Start menu. Mail group mail 1 to 14 R1C1 expanded.
What you're hearing is the start screen. Now, traditionally, you'd be able to have a list of items if you were on the desktop, for example, and use first letter navigation to get to various things. Or if you're using Windows 7, you would press your Windows key and you'd start typing something in and it would automatically do a search. If you're on the start screen in Windows 8, you can start typing something, but you can't use first letter navigation. Like if I want to jump to the first thing that has a W, if I type the letter W.
W, search, search box, W, edit box.
What
search
happened?
One of 18.
What happened is it immediately started doing a search for apps. The entire start screen repopulated with a list of items that start with the letter W on the left-hand side, and in the upper right-hand side, a search edit box appeared that was not visible on the screen before, and it's got the letter W in it. Now what I can do is I can start up and down arrowing between my search results, like if I down arrow to the next one.
Window eyes, group weather 2 of 18 R2C1 list view. Store 3 of 18 R3C1.
I can go through all these items, or I could have continued to type in the name of something. So if I wanted to find Word, for example, I could have typed in Word and then up and down arrowed through my list of apps and press Enter. The biggest thing that's difficult here besides not having first letter navigation, because it's a new concept to not have that, is that it automatically chooses by default what it's going to search. So it's going to search apps. Notice I said apps and not programs. It's going to search apps. You could choose to search files. You could choose to search settings. Unlike Windows 7, where it put all that stuff into a category, now you have to decide, do I want apps? Do I want to search settings? Do I want to search files? What do I want to look for when I'm typing stuff in?
And how do you decide which you're searching for if you type a W, for example?
You actually have to tab to a particular place on the screen where you can select between files or settings. There are other hotkeys that I don't know off the top of my head that will take you to either like a file search or a setting search, similar to what's always been in Windows, that you could use to jump to that particular type directly. Like if you want to go to files, I think it might be Windows key F, I don't remember, that you could press that and start searching inside of files. So they've tried to think of quick ways to get to all of those things from the keyboard as well. And this is where they've really kept in mind accessibility, because since they were aiming for touchscreen, they didn't have to include all of this keyboard support, but they did. So it's actually fairly nice.
My understanding was that if you're in the desktop tile, first letter navigation does still work. Is that right?
That is true. So if I press escape to get out of here, you can press Windows D or Windows M, and that'll immediately put you back on the desktop, and you can start using first letter navigation.
Jeremy, you talked a lot about not being able to use first letter navigation in the start screen. As a WindowEyes user, how would one navigate without that?
Since there isn't first letter navigation, we actually came up with a way to allow the user to navigate using first letter navigation when they're in the start screen. So for example, I'm on the start screen right now, and WindowEyes users, if they've used WindowEyes ever, they know a magic keystroke called Insert Tab. It's something we teach all the time and we put in every application. And if I press Insert Tab,
WindowEyes closed preview depth one. Start menu items mail, 1-14.
What I just did is it brought up a WindowEyes dialog. So this is specific to WindowEyes, but it took the groups that are inside of the start screen, because there are multiple groups, and it put them into a tree view. And so I could, for example, open up this tree view.
WindowEyes expanded 18 items.
And then
1-18, depth 2.
I could start down arrowing.
2-18. 3-18.
And I could actually press a key and quickly jump to whatever item that I want to get to.
M, 3-18.
So apparently we don't have something that starts with M at this point. But I could use first letter navigation inside of this particular dialog. And this makes WindowEyes really powerful with Windows 8 because, again, it does something in regards to usability that Microsoft really has changed fundamentally, and we thought it needed to be in there. So this is some idea that we came up with that we thought was just really, really awesome to have, and it makes using Windows 8 a lot easier.
So this WindowEyes feature sounds similar to the feature many screen readers have in HTML documents, where you can bring up a list of links to easily navigate by first letter navigation?
Exactly. You've hit the nail right on the head. In fact, we use the same keystroke when you're on a web page. You press Insert Tab and it can list links and other things. And so the same is true here. It can list all of this stuff right inside of the start screen.
Besides the first letter navigation, what other modifications, or I don't even know what to call it, that WindowEyes needed to create to compensate for the loss of the ability to do convenient things in Windows 8?
Well, some of those I can't disclose at the moment, but we had to do quite a bit under the hood to be able to make sure that everything functioned. A lot of this uses a newer technology called UIA, which stands for User Interface Automation. And it's different than stuff that we've used in the past to be able to access information. And so we had to make sure that all of that was working. We had it working in our current version, but some things switched in Windows 8 under the hood we had to fix. And in order to get some of these things to work, WindowEyes has apps. And so there's actually an app that constantly runs all the time called Windows Enhanced. And what you saw just a very brief glimpse of when I was inside of that dialogue was part of that Windows Enhanced app. And so we've had to do a lot under the hood. We've had to actually create our own special app. I can't talk too much about what we actually did directly with Microsoft because we're under non-disclosure agreements for a lot of that. But just rest assured that we worked very closely with them and they were very helpful to us as well. There are a lot of good people there that really want accessibility. And so that really makes it a whole lot easier.
Are there any other features of WindowEyes working with Windows 8 that you'd like to demo that we haven't asked about?
You know, I think what's important for people to know is that pretty much anything that works with Windows 8 is going to work with WindowEyes. I could go through and demo Windows Explorer and Internet Explorer and all those things, but a lot of what you're going to see is already very familiar to you. I think you've seen probably a lot of the big things that are very different. Now, there are some UI differences I didn't discuss that people will run across. But the beauty of what we're at with WindowEyes, and I was even talking about this last February, is we're not 6 months behind the eight ball here. Once Windows 8 ships, there's already going to be a version of WindowEyes that works with it. And so rather than having something very special, one of the things that we always attempt to do is try and make things work just out of the box with the defaults that Microsoft has come up with. In the case of the start menu, that wasn't possible, and so we had to add things to it. We've taken that approach with the Outlook calendar. The Outlook calendar is not very usable, so we make our WindowEyes Outlook calendar dialog to make the Outlook calendar accessible. But a lot of the other things you're going to see in Windows 8, as long as you can get to them with the keyboard, which you can, they just function. So it's kind of difficult to pick just one thing up out of the blue.
Well, hopefully that clarifies some of the new UI differences between Windows 8 and previous versions and gives people some confidence that if you need to use Windows 8 or you want to change to Windows 8, that there is a high degree of probability you'll be able to use it just quite well.
And without having to wait and be 6 months or a year behind your sighted peers.
If somebody doesn't have WindowEyes yet and wants to get it, what would they do?
They could do a couple things. They could go to gwmicro.com/demo, D-E-M-O, to download a demonstration copy. They could also call us, and we have 60-day trial evaluations available for $39. So they could try it for a full 60 days. The demo copy runs for 30 minutes at a time. So if you get 30 minutes and you reboot, you get another 30 minutes. So we have those options available. We're trying to, again, allow more people access to our product because we think that it's very beneficial and can help a lot of people out there.
And what's the phone number?
It's 260-489-3671. You can also follow us on Twitter at GW Micro. If you're a Facebooker, you can like us at facebook.com/GW Micro. You can go to youtube.com/GW Micro, or you can email us at support, support@GWMicro.com. And those are a lot of the ways you can contact us. We're very heavily involved with social media. We're constantly posting stuff, putting things up. You want to ask us questions on social media? Go for it. We love it. We enjoy answering those things.
And they really want their users to be successful, so they offer training webinars. They offer live training classes around the country. In particular, that's Jeremy who offers those classes. And you can sign up for their GW News email list at www.gwmicro.com/lists, L-I-S-T-S. Now for this week's high-tech item, some words of advice about which variety of Windows 8 to get, if you decide to get it at all, especially if you're planning to use it on a tablet.
One item that people really need to be aware of when they're looking at purchasing a Windows 8 system is they have to know about something called Windows 8 RT. This is something brand new. It's going to be on something called the Surface. I'll call it Microsoft's answer to the iPad. Essentially, it's a small mobile PC you can take around with you, and it comes in two versions. It comes in, I think maybe they call it the standard version, and it also comes in the Pro version.
This is a tablet?
This is a tablet that people can use, just like an iPad, but when you're buying it and you have to use assistive technology, you want to make sure that you go with the professional version, because the standard version uses a version of Windows 8 called Windows 8 RT, which stands for Windows Runtime. And that version does not currently work with any assistive technology. And the reason is that standard version has to work on a different type of processor called an ARM processor, ARM. And that requires certain program changes under the hood for assistive technology and even Windows itself. And so if you get one of these Surface tablets and you buy the standard version, you're not going to be able to run assistive technology on it, at least not third-party assistive technology. Additionally, it doesn't allow you access to the desktop. It only allows you access to the apps and the start screen. So you're limited in multiple ways. One, you can't have assistive technology on it. And two, you can't get to a lot of the legacy things like the desktop and other items that you're already used to. And so I want to be sure that people are cognizant of this idea of Windows RT that's out there, because what will happen is somebody will go to places like Best Buy, they'll say this is the best bang for your buck, and you'll take it home and nothing will work on it. And so I want to make sure people are aware, if you get something like the Surface, go with the Pro version. Don't just buy the cheapest version because it's going to save you dollars, because it's going to give you a lot of headaches.
So my understanding, though, is that on these RT-type systems, Microsoft has built in some accessibility, which is supposed to be much improved over Narrator, but I'm sure it's not as sophisticated as any of the third-party solutions.
That's true. There's a built-in magnifier. There's built-in Narrator. They still have limitations, just like they always have. Is it better? Yeah, it's better. Is it going to satisfy the needs of 90% of the market or 95% of the market? I don't even think it comes close. I think it tries. I think it's a good attempt on Microsoft's part, but there's still a huge need for, like, for example, some of the things I was just showing you a little bit ago with having these particular dialogues to make things usable.
Right. They seem to have a long way to go with some of those assistive technologies.
Yeah. And that's one of the great things about Microsoft versus Apple, is that they've always looked to third-party companies who are experts on their particular subject matter, and they really provide that development platform, that is Windows, to be able to make those things. And so they go to people like us, or they go to other assistive technology vendors, and they say, look, we don't know blindness. We don't know how to support blindness. We don't know anything about it. You guys are the experts. Here are the tools. Make it happen. And so that's really been a really positive relationship we've had with them.
Well, we want to thank Jeremy for giving us an overview of Windows 8 and WindowEyes, and let you know that he gave us a lot of links and contact information there, and that will all be in the show notes at www.viewpointsplus.net.
That's it for show number 1243. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about extreme sports for the blind, hiking. A hike can be much more than a walk in the woods. We'll talk with Carl Ritter, also known as Bats, about long-distance hiking, including his recent end-to-end hike on the 2,200-mile-long Appalachian Trail. Carl has very little vision and did the first 500 miles alone. Learn how he used his other senses and some tools to compensate. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.